Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Gemma, and welcome to another episode of Good Influence. This is the podcast where I welcome our guests to discuss their experiences, answer your questions, and teach us something new. This week, we're talking about secondhand shopping, the rising popularity of pre-owned clothing, how the language used to describe it affects our habits, and the importance of bringing together fashion and sustainable practices. So, joining me this week is Bay Garnett. Known in the fashion industry as the Queen of Thrift, Bay is a fashion stylist, author, and creative director. A pioneer in bringing vintage and secondhand pieces to high-end fashion shoots, she's worked as a fashion editor in publications including British Vogue and The Evening Standard, and is now also the senior independent fashion advisor for Oxfam, a vocal supporter of sustainability.
Things really only change when people want to. You know, you can't tell people to buy secondhand because it's worthy. People will buy secondhand because it's cool and it's a choice.
So first of all, could I get you to kind of tell us a bit about your background in fashion in general, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, putting it really, in a nutshell, which is I worked on a fanzine about secondhand clothes I started working on it. It's founded by my really good friend who loved secondhand. And then I started working on it with her in 96, so really scary long time ago. And then I went to New York, I had a job in an office, which I did really badly. But in the weekends and in my lunch break, I would go to thrift stores in New York City, and they were amazing back then. And then I did Cheap Date, was the name of the magazine. I edited, co-edited editions there. And it was really a celebration of secondhand and sort of interviewing great people. So it was more than literally just secondhand. It was kind of trying to tap into, it was trying to be really different from fashion magazines, which felt very kind of exclusive. And unless you were in them, you were out of them. And they sort of pretended to be inviting, but it was an antidote to that culture. So it was about kind of inclusivity, a word which wasn't used then actually, but it was come on, like, let's have fun. And so interviews with like this amazing trans woman called Jane County, who was like a Warhol superstar, and kind of finding all these really interesting people and doing interviews with them and doing thrift things and stuff. So that's how I started. And then I did a series of fake campaigns using charity shop clothes. So Yves Saint Laurent became Salvation Army, and Cartier became cast off, and Bulgari became borrowed, and Burberry became, I can't remember, but I basically, and to cut a long story short, Alex, they look like campaigns. He did a double take, but they were thrift stores, but in the same font. So Dior, what was Dior? I can't remember all of them now, but they were good. And Alexandra Shulman saw them from Vogue and said, will you be an editor, fashion editor? And I was like, oh my God, I'd never done a fashion shoot in my life. And so then I said, well, can I do a shoot with my secondhand clothes? Because I didn't even know how to call in new fashion. I had never done a shoot. And she said, okay, well, we're doing a music issue, and Kate Moss is on the cover, being, you know, as Ziggy Stardust. And so me and a really good friend of mine, a woman called Anita Pallenberg, who was incredibly stylish, and she was with Brian Jones and then Keith Richards for a long time. And she's kind of seen as kind of big influence of the Rolling Stones, because she was very clever and very stylish. But we did it together because we'd go thrifting together. And we put Kate Moss on our secondhand clothes. And it became kind of quite a famous shoot. That's how I started. I was lucky. I would have been a terrible assistant. I would have been a terrible fashion assistant. Literally the worst in the world. And I don't say that in a prideful way, because I think it's a brilliant, I think to be organized and to take care of someone else's things is a brilliant process of learning. So I'm always playing catch up with that part of myself. Does that make sense? Mm.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, it's really interesting to kind of hear that story kind of told in that way, kind of in the way that at the beginning what you were doing was kind of purposefully the opposite of what these massive fashion magazines were doing, and then you ended up working for Vogue. You know, it's kind of the stuff you were completely the opposite of trying to do, you managed to kind of bring it in-house to those places.
You know, some might call me a hypocrite. And if someone did call me a hypocrite once, and I'm like, I don't care. Call me a hypocrite. And I think, what do I care? I have to say that probably was a bit hypocritical. That is a way of looking at it, in that thing of like, actually, ultimately, Vogue or those magazines, you know, having rejected them, ultimately, maybe they are, you know, extremely seductive. But I do think that, you know, I did do the first charity shop shoot in Vogue, you know, and I say that, I don't say that as a badge of honor, but I did go in there doing my thing.
Yeah.
And I always put secondhand clothes in my shoots, always. And so I did sort of stay true to myself within that context.
I mean, I think you absolutely can wear that as a badge of honour. That's a very cool thing. And I think, as you know, things have changed so much in, you know, even if you take, you know, the past 5 years, let's say, I feel like the conversations around kind of secondhand clothing have gone a lot more mainstream.
Yes.
But you've been doing that kind of right since the beginning of this sort of part of your career. What was your motivation in secondhand shopping kind of right from the beginning back then? Because I feel like now we talk a lot about sustainability, but was that always where it was at for you?
It wasn't sustainability in the way that we look at sustainability now, where it's very much linked to climate change, but it was a sort of form of sustainability in terms of globalization. I loved the political thing for secondhand. There's a political thing, a political spirit, which is that there is something anarchic about it. You're going off grid. You're not feeding the system of new. And I like that. I like that punky spirit to it. I did. That was always something that I loved, that thing of like, I'll do it my way. And I think that Gen Z and people who buy secondhand now, I think that a lot of, you know, they love that thing. It's empowering. You're taking your own, you know, control over your style. And the other thing I like, so that was a more kind of, that's not really a driving factor to go as an active shopping choice, but I loved that element of it. I did. I always loved that. It was going off grid is how I look at it. But I also loved it as a style choice. I genuinely didn't understand why you would want to wear the same thing as everybody else when you could find the original. And also, I sound like a terrible person saying this, but I'm just being honest. I was always way ahead of the trends. Be like, a year later, because I was just finding original ideas. And remember, we're talking about the late 90s now. So, you know, it was when trends were kind of slower. So I would do the preppy thing. I would do the Ralph Lauren thing, and then I would do the da-da-da thing, and then I'd do the Yves Saint Laurent Cossack thing. So it wasn't that I was being brilliant by predicting trends or being on the, you know, the forefront of it. It was just that I was finding those ideas from the source. And so fashion is, you know, it would kind of do the same thing, but maybe a bit after or a bit differently. But for me, it was a style choice. Absolutely.
Do you think that kind of is part of thrifting and shopping secondhand kind of in its nature? Because I mean, as we see now, and I mean, we've spoken on your podcast previously, like, I don't count myself as a fashion person, quote unquote, because there's so much that I don't understand about it and so much context and history that I won't get. However, even, you know, as a shopper and a consumer, I know that there is a very sort of cyclical nature to fashion, and things from previous decades will come back up again. Do you think kind of in that way, there's something sort of inherently fashionable about shopping secondhand and finding those? Do you equate shopping, kind of thrifting and vintage, with being the same thing, or are they quite different in your mind?
I think they always were a bit different, but now I think those lines are blurred. They used to be quite different, when it was less mainstream. And also before there were sites. Remember, I was doing it before, I remember when eBay was new and it was like, whoa.
Sure.
You know, so I was doing it from the shops. So a lot of the shops were thrift stores. because there weren't that many secondhand shops around. So I kind of started when that was just what was on for sale, you know. And then the vintage thing, I used to turn my nose up at a bit because I'd be like, I'll find it from the thrift stores, you know. But I don't do that. I don't feel like that anymore. I feel like it's all kind of this huge open market. And in terms of it being fashion, I mean, it's so fashionable now because so many young people are doing it, which, God, I sound so old. So many young people are doing it. But, you know, I think that it's, I think it's brilliant that it's become, you know, things only, and you kind of said this before in my podcast, which is things really only change when people want to. You know, you can't tell people to buy secondhand because it's worthy. People will buy secondhand because it's cool and it's a choice. And that's happened now. Secondhand's cool. And it's factors like climate change, but it's also the reasons that I did it. It's making, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to be influenced by the 90s and I'm going to find the piece from the 90s.
Yeah, love that. And that feel, it has got that kind of like youth-led, quite sort of typically teenage kind of rebellious thing to it as well, right? Which I think, you know, is, it, you can't look past how impactful that is in kind of all of these new trends that come through. People do want to do stuff because it's cool.
Totally.
I mean, do you think in that way, the way that we talk about second, I mean, I very often, most often will use the phrase kind of secondhand shopping, like that's just kind of how I think of it. But I know that where we've had a lot of this sort of rebrand around shopping secondhand, sometimes people favor other kinds of phrases, like they'll talk about shopping like pre-loved clothes or like pre-owned clothes, and kind of are quite selective about the language that they're using to describe it. Do you think that's a big part of kind of rebranding shopping secondhand in sort of the court of public opinion? Or
I think that's a really good question, because pre-loved is a word that is quite foreign to me. It's quite an alien word, pre-loved. To me, it's quite a kind of,
it doesn't come naturally to me. It doesn't roll off the tongue to me.
No, pre-loved, it's a bit like, well, maybe they didn't love it. Maybe they didn't like it. You know, it's a bit like someone has to have loved. No, it's just, I like the term that you use, which is secondhand. But to me, something like a pre-loved, in inverted commas, is something, a word that is a kind of a corporate word, which is set out for something to be more palatable. And that's fine. It's like, however you want to package it, it's fine. I like me, like you, I'm like, it's secondhand.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
You know, or vintage is, yeah, me too. Also, or vintage now is quite, you know, that thing of, I used to be quite snobby about using that because I used to feel like, you know, thrifted or secondhand. It was, I was kind of on the defensive about it, but now I feel like vintage, it just means old.
Yeah.
And I like that word now too, whereas I didn't before, when it was more kind of a separate thing.
Yeah.
It was the posh end of secondhand, and now it's more generic.
That is the thing, isn't it? It's kind of that, kind of how we look and judge different things that we're shopping for. So before, maybe it would have been more vintage versus thrifted. And now I think what we're kind of seeing, maybe a different version of that conversation, is sort of the fast fashion versus any other kinds of, you know, clothing. That's obviously more commonly a commentary on quality. How do you feel that fast fashion has impacted the kind of secondhand landscape in your experience?
I think that's another good question. And it makes me think immediately of Cheap Date, the fanzine that I worked on, which was an anecdote to the culture of the exclusivity of fashion and fashion magazines and how they made one feel, which was ultimately excluded. And I think that a lot of things come out of something as an antidote, as a reaction. You know, that's how things change and things move forward and progress. And I think exactly that. I think that secondhand, the love of secondhand now, has come about as an antidote, as a reaction to the saturation of fast fashion. And it's kind of like people's way. And again, I say young people, like I'm a really old person, but people younger than me, Gen Z or Gen X, I can't remember which one, but, you know, they're doing that. And I think that that is a reaction to fast fashion, because it's kind of the polar opposite. It's like I'm in, it's almost like a tribal thing. It's like I'm in this tribe. I'm not in that tribe. I'm in this tribe, secondhand, sustainable. I'm not in the fast fashion tribe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, it's a good way to just to make your mark in terms of like, and it is a kind of form of activism, and it is all that, and it's to do with climate change, but it's also to do with, you know, where you sit.
Yeah. I mean, I always find this an interesting conversation, talking about secondhand and kind of charity shops and that kind of thing, because fast fashion has undeniably had a big impact on, you know, the quality of a lot of the clothes that are being donated to these places. And I'm interested to kind of hear what you think about it, because I think there's always been, and probably always will be, kind of more reverie and kind of more respect that's paid to designer clothes. So if you think about, you know, vintage shopping or anything, even if somebody has an item of designer, you know, clothing or accessories or whatever else, and they don't want it anymore, I feel like the idea of throwing it away has always been kind of alien, because, you know, you would sell it or you would donate it, and it's kind of the value that we place onto those pieces of designer clothing, which I understand in a way, partly because, you know, if you paid more for it, it kind of in your mind you can understand why, like, that connection might be there. But I feel like now where we're maybe trying to at least start to understand the value in all pieces of clothing, and we're trying to prevent, you know, all clothing from going to a landfill where there's no need for it to do that. Because, you know, you've got way more experience in kind of navigating all of these sorts of things. Do you think there has been a shift in how we pay respect to clothes in general? And how is that kind of showing up? How are the clothes that we're finding in charity shops changing because of that?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of people say now that there are way more high street clothes, and there are, you know, in charity shops, there are, you know, 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, you know, there just wasn't the culture that there is now for high street fast fashion. It kind of, as far as I know, it didn't exist in nearly the same way. So it has really changed that. And that's it's a shame. You know, it's a shame because it's, you know, sometimes it makes me less inclined to go into a charity shop, because I'll kind of scan it and I'll be like, I just know, I can see that it's just a load of shit in there. You know, it's just like, it's just, you know, it's just stuff I don't want, you know. But within that, there's always, but that is true, but within that, there's always great things to be found. And I do still really believe that. Always. I always find stuff in charity shops, you know, always, always, always. I mean, I kind of go now to like areas that I feel like I'm going to have a better chance of finding a great men's shirt or a great cashmere sweater. You know, I'm going to go to areas where I know them all really well, the ones that I go to. I know where to go for 70s, like a great denim shirt or something. So I think I'm lucky in that I kind of know my spots.
Sure.
And so I know my spots, and I just ignore that, all those kind of more generic pieces that I just don't want.
Are you still really sort of habitually tied into thrifting and kind of charity shopping in store, or have you stepped much into, you know, like, I mean, you mentioned the advent of eBay back in the day, but now there's so many kind of like Depop, Vinted, like all of these different places. Do you spend much time on those, or are you a hardcore kind of in-store secondhand shopper?
I mean, I think those things are great. And if I'm looking for something, then I'll use it. And, you know, my family, my husband loves eBay. And it's great to be able to look for something and, you know, to find it. Me, it was the thrift stores that I loved. And that was how I grew up. It's like we talked about when you fall in love with a decade and it kind of resonates with you and it stays with you. You know, I was crystals were like my kind of awakening, a creative awakening, without wanting to sound pretentious. You know, I've been so lucky because they've just like been a really like a real source of I'd say gift is just sounds so pretentious, no, but they've been like really something special in my life. You know, they really have. And so I'm a, you know, it's the shops for me, you know, it's the, cause that's what I've always done. So even with the high street and da da da, for me, it was about that. It was about the physicality. I love the music. I love the feelings in them sometimes. You know, I go to Salvation Army, New York, and you know, these trolleys with this crazy furniture and like Benny King on the radio. And I just, and then, you know, you go somewhere like Barney's or somewhere really posh and, you know, two such different experiences. But I kind of always just, I just preferred being in those more like kind of on the fringes or like, just, yeah. I don't know. I just preferred, I felt comfortable being in those spaces as well.
I mean, I'd love to then ask you about those. Such a great example of kind of, you know, talk about Barney's as in, you know, kind of a big, what I think of as, you know, like a polished, like department store kind of vibe. I'd love to talk to you about Oxfam and working with them. And especially because you have then, you know, opened an Oxfam store in Selfridges, which I think is so interesting based on what you just said around, you know, like bringing that kind of vibe into the more, you know, what we think of as a kind of like polished designer shopping experience. Like, talk to me a bit about that.
And Gemma, I think I also need to say, like, I love a spanking, brassy, shiny new store as much as anyone else. Like, you know, I don't want to come across, you know, trust me, I do. Yeah, so my idea of Selfridges was exactly that. It was exactly that. It was pairing up this kind of, this idea of shifting context, really. Because so often when I was thrifting, you know, you see something and it looks a bit and then I think, well, when I get it home and I put it with that. So it's always about using your imagination and shifting context. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to have an Oxfam shop with all the same Oxfam prices, but have it in like the kind of quintessential luxury store, and then to decorate it as if it's a superstore, and then to have it next to Prada. So it was next to Prada and Miu Miu, opposite Gucci. And it was an amazing experience because when you looked at it, I did it like, so the green was like green velvet, and then the gold, the Oxfam was in gold, and I had gold studs and like white chairs with flowers. So it looked the same. It looked as if you were going to the next door, and it was amazing. And then, you know, something in Gucci was £3,000 and something in Oxfam was £35. And I mean, I'll say it, you know, Gucci, you know, I mean, I'll say it, like a lot of the stuff, I did the edit. So the edit was key. So it wasn't random stuff. Like I knew exactly what was in that shop. So, but it could have been a barber jacket, or it could have been a biker jacket, or it could have been a 70s velvet dress. But it also could have been hanging on the rail of any of those other concessions. And that was the point. Just to say also as well about that Selfridges, it was really about shifting perception. It was about literally shifting perception of, like, people would say to me, but how can that be £4? This woman was really distrustful of me because she came with all these bags, Gucci, Louis Vuitton. You know, she was like doing the rounds, obviously absolutely loaded. And she saw this scarf on the mannequin. It was like beautiful silk polka dot scarf. And she was like, you know, how much is it? And I said, it's £6. And she was really like, it was really weird. Like she was freaked out because that was not possible in the context that she was in. It was not possible. And I was like, no, it really is. I tried to explain to her, like, you know, this is a bit of a project, you know. And then it was really sweet. She was like, oh, I love it even more, you know, like that. It was really sweet, actually. But I'm really sorry, I digress, but I just wanted to clarify that it was really about, and this, also the Oxfam shop was nearly 4 years ago now, so that was also a little bit before, like, all the Gen Z were doing it. It was maybe a year before, so it was still when secondhand was a bit like,
Yeah, so kind of you being able to edit and kind of pick out, you know, the kind of stuff that you can find and sort of take away, maybe because maybe I feel like the barrier to entry for some people is kind of thinking, well, I wouldn't really know where to start or what to look for kind of walking into a charity shop. Have you got any kind of baseline tips? So like if there's someone listening to this who's never shopped in a charity shop or a thrift store before and is kind of feels a bit overwhelmed by it and doesn't know where to start, what would your kind of beginner's tips be?
I would say, you know, go when you feel like it. Good to go with something in mind. It's really good to kind of have some form of engagement. Yeah, like any project you're doing, mm-hmm. you know, like connect with it. If you go into a charity shop or a thrift store or a vintage shop and, you know, you're a bit, you know, disconnected. So go in and like, I go in and I'm like, oh, I'd love to find an oversized cashmere sweater with maybe some mm-hmm. epaulettes or something like that. I go in with something in mind. So I think that's really important. You might not find that thing. I mean, you might. I do believe in thrifting karma. You know, you go in with like good thrifting, like witchy vibes, and someone will probably show itself to you. Mm. It's quite good. There is a karma there. I do believe that actually. Sometimes I've been in charity shops and I'm like, show yourself. I feel like something like that. And then it kind of goes, all right, I'm over here. So I think having some kind of faith within it, I do believe that. And I also think that, you know, like I'm really, you know, go with a bit of a kind of exactly an obsession. Like, so I always head to the men's rail, you know, look, just really look, just you could do it quickly, but just, you know, is it the print? Is it, you know what you love and just something will show itself to you. So I'm sorry, I don't have any really practical things, but it's just
okay.
to go in with a kind of like a witchy fun spirit. That's the best advice I can offer, because you know you have to just be there because you want to be there. But you know, go in with good vibes and a sense of purpose.
It sounds to me sort of like shopping more on instinct as well, which I think can be a bit different for people. So if you're only used to maybe going into like high street shops and everything is very, very curated and presented to you on the trends and they're kind of telling you what you should be wanting in the first place, whereas a charity shop's like the exact opposite of that, and there's so many different styles and it's not all based on a trend or kind of like pushed at you, so you really have to go in and figure out what is calling out to you rather than having it shoved in your face.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's really true, and that's why it's good to go in with a sense of purpose, because otherwise it can just feel mm-hmm. like there's nothing here, or I don't know, or you know, you kind of could lose your confidence. But actually, and I don't think one goes into a chat. The advice I wouldn't give is like, just try something completely different. You know, I don't do that. I go to charity shops to find the stuff that I love, that I would buy new at a much higher price. I'd rather find it at the source. I'd rather find the original.
Yeah.
But don't think you have to sort of, sometimes people think as charity shops, they have to sort of be a more zany version of themselves or you know, dress up. And no, you not at all. Remain true to yourself.
Yeah, it's not like, it doesn't have to be costume shopping. It's like,
God forbid.
Finding what you actually want to wear.
Yeah, I mean, if you need a fancy dress outfit, you know, you might get, you know, a spinning bow tie.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Every week, my guest and I will be answering your questions. And the first one comes in from Elsa, who asks, how do we learn to detach ourselves from others and from fashion to create or find our own style?
I think that's a really good question. I did that. And I tell you how I did it. I did it by watching movies and by being into like singer style. I always loved Debbie Harry. So when I'd see like an old t-shirt, I'd think, well, that's quite Debbie Harry, and kind of really made me. And I you know, look at pictures, look at Marianne Faith from the 60s, look at Anita Pallenberg, look at Keith Richards, look at pictures. I know that sounds really, look at Jane Birkin, look at people more contemporary, but, you know, go outside of what you're being told the trends are. And go like, oh, you know what? I like that. And if you look at pictures and look at movies and get your kind of inspiration from, look at pictures of Kate Moss from 2003 or, you know, whatever it is. But that's how you find your own source. And it's really freeing because you kind of get inspired by all these different things that have nothing to do with what you're being told to look at now.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, because we've talked before on your podcast about kind of finding style, you know full well, I find it quite difficult to kind of like look at people as sort of style icons, as it were. But I think the thing of what you're saying about kind of trying to detach from the trends, yeah. I think finding that confidence to be like, I like that or I don't like that. Like, I remember even when, I mean, I don't shop on the high street now at all, but when I did used to do that, there were certain, I know that I reached a certain point in my mind because there would be certain seasons where I would walk into a shop or walk into, you know, a couple of shops on the high street and I'd go, okay, I'm not going to be shopping this season. This isn't the season for me. The things that are on trend, I don't like and don't want to wear. I don't want to dress in what this season is doing. Yeah. Therefore, I'm just going to opt out of it. And I think that's kind of a big part of it. Whether you're shopping, you know, secondhand or not, I think finding... For me, obviously, there's only one personal experience, but I think feeling like you've found your kind of style, for me, was a lot about looking at stuff and going, I don't want to wear that, and kind of having the confidence to go, that's not for me.
I think that's a really, really good point. I will say this as well, and that trends are not this holy grail of some other force saying this is, it's a form of marketing. And so with this idea of being fed trends, you can also treat it with a bit of cynicism. So I would really say, just don't buy into them, because you know what? What's trendy this year won't be trendy next year. And just so much cooler and easier just to not do the trends. Just forget it. Just like, don't. Just wear an oversized sweater and a great pair of jeans. You know, just revel in the simplicity of life, or... You know what I mean? All of clothes. It can be so simple and independent, but you're not making any effort. And I want to implore, you know, just enjoy them. But, you know, take out any of those feelings that you have to follow a trend, because it's just not true.
Yeah. I think, it's the whole thing of questioning it, at least, isn't it? So I know, like, people will often talk about when you're buying something, kind of saying, sorry, I've completely taken us off topic now, but you'll look at kind of when you're going to buy something and try and think, will I want to wear this in a year's time? But I think that can sometimes be quite a hard question, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. But I think looking at something and saying, would I have wanted to wear this last year, is sometimes an easier way of kind of doing that question.
And I thinking, agree.
You know, is it just because it's trendy? Because sometimes stuff that is, you know, trendy in the moment will actually be your style, and sometimes it won't, but it's kind of trying to figure out.
I think that is really true. And I also think, I mean, the things that I've had, I wear the same things from 20 years ago, and so I would say to anyone, the classics, I know what I like, denim shirts, cashmere sweater. You know, I also think that you know what you love, and you know, so when I wear something, it wouldn't occur to me that I might not wear it in a year, because it's just what I like. I think that comes with confidence as well. But I think your point about knowing what you don't like with trends is also kind of wonderfully sort of, you know, confidence boosting in a way. Like, oh, this isn't for me. You know, it's kind of really nice.
I mean, it's definitely easier.
Yeah, exactly.
I still can't sit there and go, okay, this is my style and this is exactly what I like. But I can look at individual things and go, no, I don't like that. So it's maybe a bit more negative, but...
No, but that's because that's what dressing's all about. And when you're doing a fashion shoot as a fashion editor, it's about what you're not putting in. You know, you're not putting in thousands of pieces to everyone that you are putting in. So by editing, that's the same as choosing.
Okay. Yeah. I like that way of looking at it. Next question from Alyssa, who says, when does thrifting cross a line by taking great clothes that are cheap away from those who need them? I love thrifting, but feel bad if I take away those clothes from people who need them more than me.
Good question. Good point. What I would say to that is that if you're going to charity shops, I can speak for Oxfam, you know, if you're spending money at Oxfam, the money that you're spending, that money will then go towards, you know, life-saving work on the ground, on mm-hmm. project work to help people most affected by climate change, or, you know, going to the DEC to help, you know, help people affected by the earthquake. So actually, you know, by spending money, you're doing a really powerful thing mm-hmm. In many charity shops. So that's the first thing. And the other thing I'd say is that I think that's an incredibly considerate thing to think, but I don't think you need to, because I think that there are lots and lots of secondhand clothes. And I think that, you know, that people are always donating. And I don't think that there's a problem with shortage. Mm-hmm. So I think you should just enjoy it. But you're obviously a very conscientious person. But I think that you don't. I think in this instance, it's money well spent in a good place.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, this is a conversation I've kind of seen floating around a lot, actually, about kind of. Yeah, as in secondhand clothing and kind of thrift store clothing being like a commodity that's becoming more scarce, or kind of we're taking away from people. And I think actually the quantity of things that are, you know, being donated is massive. And I think that's maybe something people don't always realize. And also that is such a good point that you made, that when people hear the word, you know, kind of donated clothes to the charity shop, they think it's the clothes that are the commodity, and it kind of isn't. It's when it's a charity shop, you know, depending on the charity that it is, it's the money that you spend on the clothes that the charity shops need.
Yeah, which is incredible.
So I think, yeah.
And that money that goes towards it literally is like incredibly important work. The other thing I'll say is that remember that by buying secondhand, you're also subscribing to, you know, much less of a, it's not sustainable, but it's a much more sustainable, it's not entirely sustainable, but it's a much more sustainable way to shop. Mm-hmm. And you're reducing carbon, you know, your carbon footprint. So it's only a better way to shop.
Yeah. The one thing I will say that I think is more valid in this kind of conversation is I've definitely seen people talking about, because, you know, we talk about secondhand, and it's important to make sure at some point in this episode I've remembered that it can be more difficult for people in different bodies. So plus size people, for example, will find it more difficult to shop secondhand. Therefore, I think the exception to that rule of, you know, the idea of shopping in thrift shops and taking away clothes from people, I think the important thing is to not buy clothes that are way bigger than you need them to be, to then, you know, with the idea to then kind of chop them up and make them something smaller for your size. As in, if you don't need to necessarily be buying the larger sizes in thrift shops or charity shops, then maybe don't, and leave those for people who are, you know, trying to shop more sustainably but actually do have an issue with that being a more of a scarce resource. That's the only note I'd add.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, there is a shortage of clothes for larger size clothes. There is, people say that, I can't deny it, you know. Mm-hmm. there is, it's harder to find plus sizes in charity shops, secondhand shop, for sure. And also the 1970s, impossible. One was tiny. You know, you go anything past the 80s, so rare. Mm. I mean, literally, if I get a shirt or something and it says it's a size 12, I mean, I can hardly get my finger through. I mean, it's tight. The sizing is completely out, and the clothes were tiny. Mm. Then what happened to everyone? Every body shapes have changed so much.
Yeah. We've all changed. Society's changed.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone eats differently. But the 70s, they were tiny.
Okay, let's finish up with a question from Maya, who says, I love thrifting, as you always find unique and not very expensive pieces. But in the last few months, I often found myself buying some items because I didn't think I would find something similar for that cheap price again. After wearing it a few times, I noticed that I didn't really love the item as much as I thought I did. Do you have any advice on how to be sure that you really like the item for its look and not because it's a bargain?
Yeah, I'm less seduced by the bargain, and I only get stuff for the look. And then obviously I look at the price, obviously, and if it's kind of really expensive, then depending on how much I love it, but I never look at the price first.
Mm-hmm.
I have to love it to sort of inspect it for its price.
Yeah.
On the whole. Does that make sense? I mean, obviously I'll pick up something if it's interesting, or like, God, I'd never wear that. Or, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting looking at clothing, but sorry, to answer your question, you know, I'm someone, if something's really expensive, I can't afford it, I won't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's style first, and then like getting my head around the price or not. Very yeah. much so. So my advice would be just cut the money out. Don't even think about the money. Go in imagining that everything's the same price, and then take it from there. So just go with it in terms of what you love, what you need, or, you know, those things.
Yeah, that's very good advice, I think. Yeah. So don't even get to the stage of checking the price tag unless you've decided you love it already. I mean, I love a bargain. I would definitely be the kind of person to get seduced by a bargain. But I guess equally then, if you've accidentally already seen the price tag and realised it's a real bargain, kind of the thrill for you, maybe the thrill is in finding it. So maybe then what you could do in that situation would be, you know, if it's on a resale site, for example, like send it around to a friend who you think might like it, and just, you know, be aware that you've had the thrill of realizing that you've done something good and found this cool thing, and kind of you've had the thrill of the chase. But then, yeah, then go back to realizing if you actually need it or not.
Exactly. Yeah, there is something brilliant about bargain. I mean, who doesn't love a bargain? It's the best.
If you want to know about opportunities to send in questions for upcoming guests, then follow us on Instagram or Twitter at goodinfluencegs, or you can email the podcast at goodinfluencepod@gmail.com.
Before you go, I have three things I ask every guest, and so could you please recommend us something to read, something to listen to, and something to watch?
Something to read. I love a novel like the next person. I read a lot. It's my kind of, you know, I can lie down when I do it, which I love. and
ideal.
Ideal. And I just, you know, it's that thing of it's time out of screens, it's time out of everything. So, I mean, I've got so many favourite books, but one of them, I would say, just a brilliant sort of true crime, gripping, brilliant book is In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. It's a short book and it's just a great read. I don't know why Truman Capote In Cold Blood comes to mind, but it just does. I would also, there's a brilliant book if you're into clothes, is a book about Marie Antoinette, who, you know, it's like reading the best novel, but you're reading about Versailles and the clothes and the scandal and the court, and you just can't get enough of it. So I think it's by Hans Selvig. It's called Marie Antoinette, and I would really recommend that. It's unputdownable, and you sort of learn so much. So two really different books. I'd read about Anne Marie Antoinette and then this murder case in America in Cold Blood.
Great. We love a bit of balance here, so that's great. Okay, what next? How about listen to?
God, I mean, I'm obsessed with everything from the Rolling Stones to, oh my God, I mean, my playlist. I actually listen to a lot of classical music, so Bach. I mean, As It Was by Harry Styles, it's my favourite song ever. I mean, and my daughter absolutely, my daughter introduced me to it, so I love that in the car. And then I love, oh my God, just so much. Elvis to, I listened to Graceland the other day by Paul Simon, which was an album my mum played in the 80s. Oh, it's just genius. You know, so I love dipping into albums. Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. So I love dipping into those. John Denver, Country Roads, Take Me. I mean, there's so much I love, and I dip into it and I'm like, this is the best. So I'm a real, like, I don't know. Sorry to answer your question. I love so much music, and it's really important to me. Like most people, right? Music's so important to them.
Last thing then is something to watch recommendation.
You know, for anyone out there wanting to like think about like cool clothes and inspiration and lighthearted, I would really recommend that you watch some John Hughes movies. You know, my favorite being Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Pretty in Pink with Molly Ringwald, The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. Like dip in to that kind of 80s teen world. It is so great. It's just like, and the clothes are great. And it's fun. They're just great movies. And for anyone who hasn't seen them, just watch some John Hughes movies about teens in Americana 1980s. Hard to beat.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Bay, for joining me. If you enjoyed the episode, I would love you to subscribe on whichever platform you're using. And if you're feeling generous, leave a rating and a review as well. See you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.